At the time of the trial, a large oak tree is somewhere near the road. It has a strong, protruding limb suitable to serve as the gallows. Possible execution site A on the kiosk map is next to the modern oak mentioned above and is closer to the original road than site B. Soldier Alexander Meek said he held the cowhides to cut the strings to hang them with. It is nighttime by now. The condemned are led to the tree by pine torches within a circle of troops surrounding it. Three are placed on horses and led under the limb over which ropes have been thrown. Nooses are placed around their necks, and on an order, the horses' rumps are slapped to send them running. The condemned swing. This happens to three more men, and then three more, so nine bodies now hang. One witness said Mills made his wife tie the handkerchief over his eyes. Prisoner Lieutenant Anthony Allaire claims all, with their last breath and blood, held the rebels and their cause as infamous and base, and as they were turning off, extolled their king and the British government. One captain from Georgia takes a particular delight in the gruesome scene. He points at the bodies and declares, "Would to God every tree in the wilderness bore such fruit as that." The young brother of one of the next men destined to be such fruit throws himself on Isaac Baldwin and bursts into wails. Suddenly, Baldwin dives into and through the crowd of patriots. His brother has cut the cords binding him. Either stunned or overcome by their brother's emotion, no one stops him. But Baldwin is caught a few weeks later and brained by a rifle butt to his head. Apparently another man is tied off in Baldwin's place, and the new threesome is prepared to hang. For some reason, though, Shelby or some of the magistrates stop the proceedings. Maybe the emotion raised by the Baldwin incident changed the mood of the assembly. The three are untied, and the troops drift away. Ambrose Mills' wife was at the trial and sat all night in the rain as his body dangled from the tree. Her husband and the rest have been left where they hang. A young child is in her arms. Two daughters of Tory Captain James Chitwood arrive at the camp in the night to visit him and are told he was tried but pardoned. They are escorted to a fire to warm themselves as someone presumably goes off to find him, but the news comes back that he is among the dead. They react as you would predict. A condemned but spared loyalist comes to Shelby around 2 a.m. "You have saved my life, and I will tell you a secret," he says. "Tarleton will be here in the morning. A woman has brought the news," probably when they were at Gilberttown. He is referring to the British cavalry of the feared and detested Lieutenant Colonel Bannister Tarleton. Whether true or not, the Patriot colonels take no chances. The officers roust the men, and the army marches off when ready about 5 a.m. The rumor is partially true. Tarleton had been looking for them, but at this point is retreating from Charlotte with the rest of the British Army. Later that morning, Aaron's wife Mary Bickerstaff and an enslaved, elderly farmhand cut down the bodies and bury eight of them in a shallow pit grave somewhere in the distance. The exception is Chitwood. Two of his sons are among the prisoners, and the Patriot leaders agree to free them if they sign a parole agreeing not to fight for the king again. You watch as the siblings walk off toward home a half mile away with their father's body on a board.